Today we've got an Army Doxy alert, a revelation, so to speak. We're going to be talking a little bit about structure and how we fit into that structure. This is Father Voskan. I'm a priest of the Armenian Church, connecting the dots between the spiritual, the physical, the emotional, and the psychological. And I'm inviting you to join us. Let's take the next step. Episode number 405.
Hi, this is Susie from epostle.net, welcoming you, our worldwide community, to a new episode of The Next Step with Father Voskan. The next step is a step, a stride, moving us forward. Here, Father Voskan provides his unique and distinctive voice for Armenian Orthodoxy, as providing an intelligent and practical answer to the challenges of life, based on the solid principles of love, faith, and hope as expressed by Jesus Christ. And most importantly, you don't have to check your brain in at the door to follow Armadoxy. It's a practical approach to melding spirit and passion in the real world. So turn up the volume and get ready to take the next step.
Well, welcome. It is so good to have you with us. I hope you're doing fine. And we are over here. We are broadcasting from the Pasadena studio of epostle.net. It's beautiful over here. Just blue skies, wonderful Southern California morning. And I hope it's beautiful wherever you're at least for the next hour. If it's not, just kind of pretend it is, okay? Because we're together. We're spending some time together. We're going to be delving into Armadoxy. Deep things, spiritual, otherwise. Got a lot to share with you today. I want to start off. Actually, this morning I got up and I was reading an interesting I don't want to say essay. I guess it was. It came in the form of an email. A guy, a former priest who is kind of like making some noise about the Armenian Church. And it was interesting because the criticism was right on target. At least for me, I want to share some ideas with you about what's going on within the entire Armenian Church. I know we don't talk about the institution, right? But that's probably why I want to bring it up, why we don't talk about the institution. But I want to start off with an Armadoxy alert. No. We need something more striking, okay? We need some kind of a fun music. Hey, are you guys watching the Armenian Church 101? We are having too much fun there, aren't we? Wait till you see this week's. We are having a lot of fun. But we need some fun music for right now. How about that Kill the Rabbit song? No. Okay, we need something really exciting. Yeah, okay. All right, that's the way I like it. Okay, because this is an Armadoxy alert, an Armadoxy revelation. Something new. You know, this Armadoxy idea came about a few years ago when we decided that, hey, you know what? There is such an incredible find within the Armenian Church. Unfortunately, it's masked over with all the hoopla. And it reminded me of the parable that Jesus tells. He says, the kingdom of heaven is like a man going out in search of a fine pearl. And when he finds that pearl, he sells everything that he has so that he can acquire it. Well, you know, that pearl is really the Armadoxy. It's Armenian Orthodoxy in its purest sense. It's right there. It's the kingdom of heaven. It's sitting there. It's right there for the grabbing, for the taking. But it's been covered up with oyster shells, with oyster mussels, with all kinds of ugly stuff, okay? And so you can't see that pearl. When you find it, you realize what a treasure it is, and you have to have it. That's Armadoxy, okay? That's Armadoxy. That's inside Armenian Orthodoxy, inside the Armenian Church. And, you know, I say this because so many people get covered up by the hoopla. I go through quite a bit of people, priest wannabes, people who have commentaries. Let's leave that for the second portion of this show. I'm going to be sharing with you some ideas about what's going on, because it is troubling, you know. When you think about it, Jesus was this barefoot man from Galilee, and then you see all the hoopla. You see all the pointy hats, and you see all the gold, and you say, okay, something's off in this equation. Are these the people who are following this man Jesus? Well, obviously not. Obviously, right? How do you start following that? That Jesus message. What is that Jesus message? And I want to share with you an Armadoxy revelation. Okay, Armadoxy revelation. We got a revelation last night. During the Lenten season, we have a service called Huskum. It means, literally, it means vigil. The Lenten vigil. And it's a word that has been used in the church. Really what it is comprised of, at least here in America, I don't want to speak everywhere, but here in America, there are two services that take place, 2 hours of the church. Let me back up a little bit. In the Armenian church, there are 7 hours of worship. Okay, it begins with the Kisharayin, the night hour. Then there is the morning service, Arevakal, or the sunrise service, number 3, the Jashu, the midday service, or the meal service, that's number 4. And then there is the evening service, number 5. 2 more services on top of them. One of them is called the Chagagan, the peace hour, and the 7th one is called the rest hour. Okay? Nanik, nanik, time to go to sleep. So these two services, these last two services during the Lenten season, because unfortunately we are not living in a monastic situation, unfortunately, that we don't get to hear these services. So at least during the Lenten season, we celebrate these services. We actually, I don't want to say perform, we actually go through these services. And it gives us an opportunity to focus in on our prayer life. During the Lenten season, I've shared with you, we have this opportunity to heighten not only our prayer life, our fasting, but also our compassion, our mercy. Now, put that on hold, okay? So last night, we had the Huskum. We were doing 2 of the services, the peace hour and the rest hour, Chagagan and the rest hour. Now put that on hold. I'm going to come back to it in a minute. There is a teaching in the Armenian church that I've had a really hard time with. I particularly don't care about it, actually. Okay, it is one of the fundamental teachings of the church that during that time after Jesus' crucifixion, when he was buried in the grave, remember, Joseph of Arimathea came by and asked for Jesus' body from Pilate. This is scriptural, okay? And Pilate gave the body, and Joseph took a brand new tomb. And it was in this tomb that they placed Jesus' body. Well, the church tradition teaches us that during that time, when Jesus' body was laid to rest, and before his resurrection 3 days later, during that time, Jesus descended into hell, and in hell he preached to the souls, and then he was resurrected. Why don't I like this? Well, it's kind of like it's nice. It's nice to believe that, you know. It's comforting, right? Okay, if we've had loss in our family, and we think, okay, they've gone to hell. You think that, okay, they got another chance. But what are the chances that these people will not react? I mean, think about it for a moment, right? Doesn't it, basically, if Jesus was going to go down to hell, and, I mean, I'm just thinking logically, right? I know, too. I don't do that too often. Think about it logically, okay? Jesus goes down to hell to preach to the souls. Now, can you imagine just even one soul that wouldn't react positively to Jesus? I mean, you're in hell. You're being punished forever, eternity, right? Hellfires and all this stuff. And then Jesus comes and says, I've got a way out. Okay, we're giving you a second chance. Can you just think of one person who wouldn't react positively to that? And I mean, so basically what we're saying is at that point, he cleared out hell, right? That's it. He basically went down and he cleared out hell. Because who would not in their right mind say, yes, Jesus, I want to get out of here. Give me a chance. Give me a break. So I have a little bit of difficulty with this, as I do with the whole concept of hell. I think most of the concept of hell has been created, especially because of the West and the imagery that we have. But that's another story. So this idea that Jesus goes down to hell and he preaches to the souls has always been a difficult concept to me. So last night, okay, fast forwarding to 2016, last night we had the Huskum service and the peace hour. And as we were praying, I was thinking, because I usually say just a few words at the very end, and it's not really a homily, it's not really a sermon, it's just basically a few words of meditation for people to take with them on their way home. And I had a few thoughts that were in my head, and I was going to be sharing with the people that evening, but I all of a sudden was listening to the prayers in a different manner, and it occurred to me that each prayer during this service, each song had a unique message that could be expounded upon. In a very, I mean, you could basically write volumes upon each one of these concepts. In particular, what hit me was the concept of the second coming. I was thinking about that because, well, you're going to see this week's Armenian Church 101. It's a fun one. We were having fun there. It's about the second coming because this week is the Sunday of Advent. And maybe because I was like kind of more sensitive to that. And during the prayers, during the songs, I kept hearing the theme of the second coming in there. So it prompted me to look at the very beginning, because each one of those seven services that I shared with you a few minutes ago, each one of those seven services is dedicated uniquely. And at the beginning of the service, the dedication is there to God the Father, to God the Son, to God the Holy Spirit. Different dedications. I said, let me see what the Peace Hour is dedicated to. Lo and behold, it's dedicated to the Holy Spirit, dedicated to the Word of God. To the Word of God, Panthastvads, which is Jesus Christ. And it is dedicated not only to Jesus Christ, but to specific events in his life, namely, get this, namely his burial, his descent to hell, and his coming out of hell. That hit me. Okay, we've got this service and descent to hell. And I told you my problems with that whole idea. And then boom, that's when the revelation hit me. By the way, this service, the Chagagan, is written primarily by Nerse Shnorhali, the great, great mystic, the great father of the church, the great Catholicos, the great hymnist, great prayer warrior, the great Saint Nerse Shnorhali, 12th century. And that's when it hit me. Peace Hour. Jesus descending to hell. Where is that hell? If not right now. If not in our lives. Jesus descending into our lives today. And clearing us out from that hell. Giving us an opportunity to rise beyond that hell. And when you do rise beyond hell, what do you get? Well, what's the name of the service? Chagagan. Peace. chaos is in hell. You come out of hell, you've got peace. And basically these prayers, this peace hour is exactly that. If you think of the imagery of Jesus descending into hell, where is he descending right now? He's descending right now into our lives. And the hell is really all around us. The problems that we suffer, the difficulties that we have. I mean, whether you talk globally, whether you talk in your communities, or you talk privately in your own lives, you know what those hells are. And there certainly are many of them. I can attest to them globally, right? We can all agree upon those. And when Jesus enters it, he brings the message of love. He brings love into that setting. What happens? You can only have peace. And that's what these prayers, that's what these hymns all point us to. And that was my Armenian Orthodoxy, Armadoxy revelation last night. That once again, as we're showing, yes, you can look at the history and you could look at these as historic events, Jesus going down into hell during the 3 days between his burial and his resurrection. And you could say, okay, there was a history there, right? It happened in reality. It happened on this marked day, you could say, between that Friday and before Sunday morning. Okay, so you've got some dates over there that you could look at. Or you could understand it spiritually, mystically, as a metaphor. But beyond a metaphor, you can understand it as a reality. In where? In that timelessness. In that timelessness that we celebrate. That timelessness that connects us with 2,000 years ago and is today, 2016, with Jesus descending into hell. And where is that hell if not around us, if not within our own lives? As St. Nectarius says, he says so beautifully, he says, seek God's kingdom, not without you, but within. Well, if God's kingdom is there, guess where else? Where the antithesis of that kingdom is. Namely, where is that hell? It's also in us. It's the problems that we have, the difficulties, the disease, the torture that we go through. And Jesus comes in there to give us that peace. It's wild. It's wild. If you look at the prayers of the peace hour, they all point in the direction of anti-chaos, so to speak, in bringing order. And in that order, you find the peace. I'm going to talk a little bit more about this after the break. I'm going to take a break right now. This is a song, special request from our producer. She doesn't get to request too often, right? We'll often sit down and we say, okay, this is the song of the day, and it's based on what people have asked, people are asking. But this is Susie's find. Yes, it's Susie's find. I'm going to share it with you right now, and I'm sure you're going to love it. I loved it. Okay, so this is Luisi Lusso, it's Dikran Hamasyan and the Yerevan State Chamber Choir doing Orhnyale Astva. It's a beautiful rendition of it. The entire album is beautiful. I'll say more about it in a couple of minutes. Enjoy. Oh. Luis y Luiso. That is the CD on which you'll find this, or the album you'll find this on. Luis y Luiso is the project. It's a unique project of piano and voices. Dikran Hamasyan is the artist, working with the Yerevan State Chamber Choir. And of course, the chamber choir is being conducted by Hartun Topikyan, of course. Fantastic music, and I highly recommend that you check out the album. Go to our show notes today and follow the link there, because you got to listen to the rest of the songs on this album as well. Just beautiful. I mean, you melt away. I mean, if you were transformed during this rendition of Ornial de Aswad, just wait till you hear the other stuff on here. Anyway, you know what? I want to read to you a little bit off of their website, because I think you next steppers that have been with me for a while will figure out why I'm reading this, okay? Luis y Luiso, Dikran's music, Dikran Hamasyan, is a new musical undertaking. It's a fresh and attractively youthful representation of Armenian sacred music of the 5th to the 20th century from the perspective, and it is released on the internationally acclaimed record label ECM last September. And it features the works of Nerse Shnorali, Grigor Naregatsi, Gomidas, Magarek Malian, just to name a few of the heavyweights, and a lot of others. This is good stuff. So why am I reading this to you? Of course, you understand that. Basically, this is what Ormodoxy is about, right? It's like extracting this beautiful treasure that's there, and he has done so with the musical treasures that Armenian Orthodoxy has left us with. And what's sad about it is that we're giving up the church portion of it. How important is that? We're going to be talking about that in the next section of our show. But for right now, Luis y Luiso. Hope you enjoyed it. Check out the show notes. Do be supportive of not only this artist, but all the artists that we feature here on The Next Step. Beautiful music, isn't it? Okay, we hear music like that, and you go wild. You go, what a treasure that is. Now, how come we can't achieve that treasure within the confines of the church? You know what I'm asking? There's a structure. There's a structure called the church. And there's bishops, and there's priests, and there's Katholikoi, patriarchs, all kinds of people in there. Why isn't this happening? Why can't we achieve this quality, what you just heard a few moments ago in Luis y Luiso? Let's bring it, make it personal, okay? What about what we're doing here as the next step? Why is it such a situation where we are creating our own forums? And you do a search on the internet, you've got all kinds of forums about the Armenian Church. This is perhaps the only one that's an audio blog, but there are certainly standard traditional blogs. It sounds funny, doesn't it? That a blog is traditional at this point in there. tradition usually, it's the heavyweight about it, right? But you know what I'm talking about. So why are we going outside of the church to express ourselves? Ever since we've started the In His Shoes ministry 12 years ago, I mean, even before that, we were doing it without a banner, so to speak. People have been attracted to it. Do you know right now at St. Peter Armenian Church in Glendale, where In His Shoes is at, and it's basically where we started all this outreach, we get people calling up. They want to come and participate in the outreach program. And it's so popular that sometimes we have to refuse them. And the point of refusal, I mean, basically the criteria of refusal is, hey, you can't just get involved in this part. We want a whole commitment for the church. Because we certainly believe that the church is much more than the outreach. It's an outreach to the soul, to the mind, to the spirit. And so you kind of got to get into that whole system. And yet people don't understand. Hey, all we want to go and help out homeless. Well, you have many opportunities to help out homeless. I mean, there's nothing to stop you from getting into your car and driving down to the shelter and doing it, right? But what we're doing is we're trying to understand ourselves as a functioning entity, as a functioning outreach, appendage of that body of Christ, right? So we are the hands, the legs. And to me, this is really important. And I sometimes question myself, why is that important? Well, because I believe in the sanctity of the church in that body of Christ. Now, the problem is that who else believes in it? And you go and you look at basically the messages that have been given to us from church leadership. It's basically non-leadership, isn't it? It's talking about other stuff. For instance, check out the Etchmiadzin website this past week. And you see that there was the meeting of the Supreme Spiritual Council. Okay, Supreme Spiritual Council. Now, in the Armenian Church, there's one of these. It's rhetorical. It's rather because it isn't in reality. Okay, but there is this idea that the Armenian Church is, and it's been said many times. I'm only laughing because when we get together as priests, there's a few of them that know where this is coming from. And when we say it, we all have to chuckle at it. But the Armenian Church is a democracy. Yeah, it is. On paper, it is. On paper, it is. Structurally, that's how it is. It's basically a democracy in the idea that majority rules kind of idea. On paper. We don't have a pope. There is no pope. In other words, that there is no one person who dictates and says this is the way that it has to be. Actually, what we have is a Catholicos, and the Catholicos is basically a chief bishop. So that when you get together with all the bishops, you maybe have about 40 bishops, he's the chief bishop who basically presides, oversees how things are going. Now, the rules and regulations, so to speak, the canons pertaining to these offices are up for debate, unfortunately. And this is really one of the tragedies that always gets overlooked. When we talk about genocide, when we talk about, 600, 700 years under Ottoman rule, we forget that during that time, there was basically this church that was existing as a quasi-government for the Armenian people. And during those 600 years, 700 years, things, inevitably, there was confusion. And so you try to find a means, you try to find a bylaws, a canon law that you could ascribe to the church, but unfortunately you can't, because when you're living in exile, when you're living outside of the parameters of the free and free functioning church, it's very difficult, especially when you're living under someone else's regime, namely the Ottoman Empire at the time. It's basically impossible. But even though, as impossible as it was, the Armenian Church was able to put together some laws, some regulations. And these primarily in the 19th, 20th century, you see them. And I won't go into the details about them, but they are codified. They are laws and they have been approved by certain geographical councils and committees and so on. Now, there isn't uniform consensus. For instance, there is a Catholicos that exists in Cilicia. Geographic boundaries for that Catholicosate are drawn out. Very, very clear geographical boundaries. Cilicia. Now, Cilicia, as you know, doesn't exist anymore under Armenian rule, right? It's an ancient kingdom. Well, what happened is they moved over the Catholicosate to Antilias. This is in the 1920s, I believe. Okay, they moved it over to Antilias, Beirut, Lebanon, Lebanon. Okay. The Armenian church had to endure communism in Armenia proper. And you had a Catholicos of Etchmiadzin who had to function within that communist system. Many difficulties. And instead of people abandoning ship and trying to create havoc, you had a loyal group of bishops who supported and stayed with Etchmiadzin. And they functioned primarily under Catholicos, Catholicoi, who were incredibly, brilliant, but they were also brave. It took guts to function during that time. Many of us of my generation got to know His Holiness Vazgen I, incredible clergyman, and a statesman on top of it, able to find a dialogue and work within the confines of the Soviet system. And really, the only place, this was remarkable, one of the only places in the Soviet Union that had religion. I went to a seminary. I'm a testament to that. I went to a seminary in 1977-78 in Etchmiadzin. Yes, in the Soviet Union. Weird, right? Oxymoron, right? I went to a seminary in the Soviet Union. It was open. It was functioning. And there was nobody else to thank except His Holiness Vazgen I, who had found this dialogue with the Soviets. Now, why am I saying this? Because during that same time, of course, you have this exiled Catholicosate that's functioning out of Antilias. And, of course, there were CIA operatives that were functioning with them. And this is all documented. I mean, it's all there, right? Basically, you had the Cold War. You had McCarthyism going on in America. Hey, have you seen the new movie, Trumbo? Blacklists and everything? Okay, so imagine you've got a Catholicos in Armenia who's under Soviet rule. Well, guess what? They're automatically going to be the enemy. And this happened even more pronouncedly in the Russian church, where you had white and red Russians. Can you believe that? Yeah. Well, anyway, to make a long story short, a few of the churches here in America were taken over by the Catholicosate of Cilicia. Basically, they went against canon law. Yes, they went against canon law, and they established churches by taking them over. Now, case in point, I will point them out, okay? One of them is Holy Trinity in Fresno. One of them is Holy Cross here in the Los Angeles area. My grandfather was a member. He was a member of Holy Cross when it got taken over. And they were forced to go out and start a new church, St. James. And unfortunately, all this thing is happening in front of our eyes. Nobody's talking about it. And now you've got basically the Catholicosate of Cilicia who has churches in America. And this is completely against canon law, because in a geographical area, you can only have one bishop. Now, of course, it begs to the question that, well, what about all the other bishops? What about when you're talking about the Greeks and the Russians? And these are all basically same belief system. And now you've got these things. But you get the idea. Under the Armenian church, right, you've got this very unusual and sad, tragic division among the clergy. And it's really basically perpetuated by a couple people up at the top. I know it's not on the bottom because I'm at the bottom level and I know we get along, okay? It's the people up at the top. And I'm not just saying clergy only, okay? I don't want to go into this, and I can. If you're interested, I'd be happy to go into it on a separate occasion. But what I'm getting at right now is that the Armenian church has this democracy. It's built into the system, but we're not employing it. We're not using it. We're not exploiting it to the point that we should. And so we get together and we talk about some of the travesty that's taking place in the Armenian church. And what is that travesty? For instance, we talk about our people are staying away from the church. Our youth, the youth, are not coming to church. Where are the youth and everything? We talk about the language of the church. These are all smoke screens, by the way. Smoke screens for a bigger problem of the lack of faith that's existing throughout. And so when you go to the Etchmiadzin page and you see that the Supreme Spiritual Council, this is how we got started on this, right? The democracy there is that for each of the clergy, there are councils and there is a larger body. For instance, if you belong to a parish in the Armenian Church, you know that there is a parish assembly, which is the membership of the church. There is a parish council who works with the church, with the priest on a day-to-day basis. Same way, each of those parishes feed into the diocesan assembly, which are members of all the different parishes, and there is a diocesan council, namely a group that is picked by that assembly to run the daily operations of the diocese along with the primate. So too, there is a national ecclesiastic assembly that all the dioceses send their delegates to. This assembly meets and picks out the Supreme Spiritual Council. So you see, on each level, the parish assembly has a parish council. The diocesan assembly has a diocesan council. The National Ecclesiastic Assembly has the National Ecclesiastic Council, or the Supreme Spiritual Council, that works with the Catholicos. Now, the problem is that because of those conditions that I described, because of so many years operating under in the Malay system, under Soviet times and everything, this has never been really documented. In fact, so much so that back in 1994, when His Holiness of Blessed Memory Vazgen I passed away, the Armenian Church was at a loss of how to even conduct the election process for the next Catholicos. And they had to go back. They had to go back and see how it was done 40 years ago. And of course, times have changed. The populations had changed. The geography had changed. People had migrated. I mean, 40 years is a lot of time. Yeah, it's not a lot of time, but it's certainly enough time for a couple generations to move around and population areas that you would never expected. Back in 1955, you would not have thought that, for instance, Southern California, all of California, would be heavily populated by Armenian. And you've got basically it's probably the second most populated area outside of Armenia, right? Moscow or Russia, or basically the former Soviet states. This would be the first center. And then the second one is obviously California. You've got such a large concentration of Armenians. And so the demographics would dictate then how the delegates are assigned. And so all of a sudden, 1994, you had this national Ecclesiastic Assembly that got together and selected the next Catholicos, namely His Holiness Karakin I. And at that time they said, oh, wow, you know, we are out of it. We need to figure out how to have an assembly so that we could put the rules and regulations together of who's a member, for instance. How do you select a member to this assembly? And what are the legitimate concerns that need to be addressed, and what are the legitimate, this is important, rights and responsibilities of the people governing these bodies. And lo and behold, before there was enough time, His Holiness Karakin I fell ill, and 4 years later, there had to be a second assembly, 1999, because he had passed away. And that assembly elected His Holiness Karakin II. And since that time, they'd been talking about getting together an assembly. Now, they did make some strides in this area, and this is very, very commendable. It's very, very important. In fact, next year, they're going to be getting together, I believe in May. It's going to be the calling of the National Ecclesiastic Assembly, and it will have to be figured out according to populations and according to who's who and what's what. And during these meetings, it's an opportunity for people to talk about what are the extents and the rights and the responsibilities of these governing boards. Now, that being said, you take a look at the Supreme Spiritual Council. There's a picture up there. And what's very strange about this picture is that, first of all, there are no clergy without hoods. Namely, there are no one from the... You basically got the bourgeois and you don't have the commonplace. You've got bishops that are on there, and it's beautiful that the bishops are the overseers, and they should have their pulse on the community, but it would be nice to have a smattering of a few unhooded clergy, right? That would be part of that. That's also something that needs to be discussed, for instance. Like, what is the percentage? What is the ratio of people that should be in there? How about the guy that's sitting down next to the Catholicos? Who is he? Interesting. On one side, you've got a representative of Istanbul, the Patriarchate of Istanbul. The other guy, he's wearing a suit and tie. He happens to be from the Armenian General Benevolent Union. Don't ask me. Don't ask me why that guy's sitting there, okay? And he's part of it. In fact, the press release that goes with it says that he was at the meeting and he was driving some of that meeting too. So it's interesting. Now, what I'm saying here is that this opens yourself up to criticism. As the body of Christ, you need to be able to justify. Now, it certainly may be that these people are all justified, but if you are an open democracy, you need to be able to account for these. You need to be able to talk about these. And these are just basically growing pains of a church that's been in exile, a church that has existed under oppression, under oppressive systems, okay? And these are just growing pains, yeah? Yeah, they're going to resolve themselves. But what happens is along the way, you've missed the mark. You've missed out on that. And you need to be able to bring it back onto the track. And some of us are very impatient because at some point you realize you have one life to live. And you want to see things done. And so people become critical of these systems. Me too. We become critical and we find it easier. And coming back to our original question. So you say, okay, there's a beautiful and rich tradition here. I'm going to go out there and I'm going to create this music outside of the church and let people hear the music, hear that beauty of it. But then when they come back to the church, what do they find? Do they find that music there? Same thing with us. A lot of times we sit here and we talk about what Armodoxy is and people say, oh, wow, that's exciting. Where can I go? And I this is really one of my biggest problems. Where can I go? And I don't know where to send them. Does Armodoxy really exist? Can it exist? Is it okay for us to talk in conceptual terms? And yet the existence of it is basically up to each and every one of us as a formal system. Is there a Church of Armodoxy? No, there isn't. There isn't a building that you could say this is Armodoxy in action, except apart from what we're doing. I guess we could say the In His Shoes ministry, what we do through In His Shoes, that's basically Armodoxy in action, okay? But is there a system where you have a church, you have your bishop? No, you don't, because once you get into that system, then you've got these other problems. Then you've got that hierarchy, and it's a vicious chain of events. What do they call it? A catch-22. Catch-22. You go in one direction, and you end up in another direction, and there you are, and it's difficult. And so here we are doing these things. You've got people out there doing outreach ministries. You've got people out there going out and visiting the prisons. You've got people out there creating the music, and all in the name of Christ. And really, they should be unified. They should be unified under the head of the Armenian Church, because the Armenian Church does have the structure, the ability to put them all together, but we're not implementing that right now. And so you either have to have a little bit of patience or you need to be bucking the system. But I think we always have to stay vigilant. And that's the key word. Be awake and know what's going on. Get the information, what's going on. It hurts me. The tragedy of it is that meanwhile, we have souls that are being lost. I shared with you a few minutes ago about the tragedy of the split within the church. It is tragic because people go to these churches and don't realize that they are non-canonical. And so you get in there and yeah, you're doing really good. Everything is fine. You enjoy the priest. You enjoy his sermons. You enjoy the camaraderie, the fellowship that there is. But in reality, at some point, it could all be lost. In reality, are you serving the church that Jesus Christ set up? Big questions. You can argue them. But the history, the tradition is out there. It's difficult. I know it's difficult. I go through this all the time, except I'm on the inside, so I do see some of the other stuff. And like I said, it's probably not for our discussion today, but I've never shied away from talking about it and will do so in the future. Anyway, that's going to do it for today. Let Susie make her announcement. I'll be back in a couple minutes.
This is Susie for In His Shoes Ministries. Before continuing with today's broadcast, I wanted to take this opportunity to remind you that this podcast is made possible through your prayers and generous donations. The message of Armenian Orthodoxy, or as Father Vazgen calls it, Armadoxy, is giving people an intelligent and practical answer to many of life's difficulties. At epostle.net, we are determined to bring apostolic evangelism to an electronic world. This means we must avail ourselves to technology's latest tools. Your donations help us expand and deliver this message to a waiting world. Please support us by pressing on the donate button at epostle.net. Thanks for listening and God bless. We now return to this week's Next Step with Father Vazgen.
Thank you, Susie, for that announcement, and thank you to all of our listeners who support this ministry with their prayers, with their financial support, with their letters of encouragement, and they go a long way. You know, this Sunday in the Armenian Church happens to be Advent Sunday. I hope you will check out our AC 101. We had fun making it. We're having too much fun. It's almost not like a church, you know? We're actually having fun. Anyway, it should be up on the website, on the Diocesan website, I believe tomorrow, Friday, AC 101. It's going to be about Advent, about the Second Coming. And you'll see what I mean about having fun. But Second Coming is interesting because our church fathers give us a message on that day. They repeat the commandment of the first coming. Love the Lord your God with all your heart, your mind, and your soul. The second one is to love your neighbor as yourself. These are the commands of Jesus. On a Sunday that is dedicated to the second coming of Christ, this is what we read. Do you get it? This is what Armadoxy is all about. Armadoxy, the essence, is right there. Right at in front of us, staring us in the face. You want to be ready for the second coming of Christ, all you need to do is listen to what he said at his first coming. That's it. It's not any more complicated than that. You don't need to know maps, treasure chests. You don't need to go and search Bibles. You don't need to go and listen to preachers and spend money. You want to be ready for the second coming of Christ, all you have to do. All you have to do is listen to what he said at his first coming. I think if we all listened to his first coming, we'd be in a lot better place than we are today. Tomorrow's going to come whether you like it or not. Let's worry about today. Let's make the best of today. Let's keep the love that he has given us in our hearts and be able to share that with one another. That's the way that we are prepared always for the second coming. I want to thank you for joining us today. We are at the end of today's show. I look forward to being with you again next week. Get involved in your church. Tell me what's going on over there. Always look forward to hearing from you. You could drop me a line at feedback@epostle.net. Got some exciting things coming up in the next few months, including the release of the new Gore album called Passport. And look for it. We're going to be releasing in June in Armenia. Hopefully a United States premiere in May. I'm very excited about that. Good things coming up. We got Easter coming up in a few weeks. We'll be sharing a lot of ideas in the next couple weeks on this show about Easter, the resurrection, and it's important for us in our lives today. Hey, for the wonderful crew who put today's show together, for Susie, our producer, Ken, our engineer, this is Father Voskin inviting you to join us again next week.
And now here's the fine print.
The information and comments presented within this podcast and our website do not necessarily represent the views of the Armenian Church hierarchy, but are presented as a challenge to define the dynamics of Armenian Orthodoxy in all aspects of life. Listening to these shows is habit-forming. Addictive behavior associated with the next step is rarely, if ever, remedied. Rather, the next step is known to relieve and cure common cases of narrow-mindedness, prejudice, numbskulledness, and glaucoma in patients over the age of 20. Results may vary depending on credit rating. Findings are based on double-blind studies conducted in Istanbul and Jerusalem. Side effects include mind expansion, clarity of focus, higher rates of heart palpitations, sensitivity to the pain of others, and occasional nausea. The management and production crew of epostle.net take full responsibility for changes you will experience. Not valid with any other offer.
Off by one top limits.